of prayer. Heavenly Father, this is your house, and we are your people. Help us to honor you in the things that we say and do in this place today. Help us to encourage one another, to comfort one another, and to help one another to be the people that you would have us to be. Help us to look into your word and see the messages that you have there for us. The plain text tells us what you would have us to do. Help us to realize that and live our lives according to your word. In Christ's name I pray. Amen. It's good to see each one of you. It's good to be here. Thank you guys for coming. We are studying the Bible and what it has to say about the coming kingdom. And we're using Andy Wood's book as a guide to help us get through. His book is divided into four parts, and we're still, after all this time, still in part one. We are getting to the end of it, and we have talked about things. I'm going to flip through some slides here real quick. You've seen most of these. We discovered in our study that the blueprint for the coming kingdom is found in the Old Testament, starting in the Old Testament as early as the beginning of Genesis, which kind of lays out for us what God intended his world to be in his creation in the Garden of Eden and what he set up there. And he made promises after the fall and all of what God created was lost and changed. He made promises in the Old Testament to Abraham and Moses and David and others, and spoke through the prophets to tell us exactly what would occur and what would happen. And I flipped through too many. And Satan has been the lord of this earth for a long time. And we saw, even at the beginning in Genesis, where Satan had apparent victories, that he was defeated progressively through his eviction from the Garden of Eden, his eviction from heaven, and the curse that he incurred in the Garden of Eden after tempting Adam and Eve to sin, the efforts that he made all throughout history as recorded in the Old Testament to prevent the things that God was laying out from occurring through the crucifixion on the cross, which was an apparent victory, but which we know was overcome and Satan was defeated through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And at the midpoint of the tribulation, he achieves another apparent victory, which is really a loss, when he sets himself up to be worshipped in the temple, in the tribulation temple that is built. And then at the beginning of the millennium, when he and his armies are defeated as they come against the city of Jerusalem, and Israel is preserved to bring about the rest of the kingdom. So we're at item number 17 on this list of what the kingdom says through the Bible. We're talking about the eternal state. We've studied the millennial kingdom, but in order to fully understand God's plan, we need to understand what's beyond the millennial kingdom. So we know that the kingdom occurs after the tribulation, that period after the second advent, when Jesus comes back to earth to establish his rule on the throne. And we know that this kingdom lasts for 1,000 years, at the end of which Satan is brought out of the abyss, where he's been bound for 1,000 years, during this period where God is asserting his authority over this earth. Jesus is set up as the king of this world, and we are his servants, serving him in this world, physically on this world. Jesus is ruling from David's throne, which we believe to be physically located on this world in Jerusalem. And from there, there will be mortals that come through the tribulation period. The nation of Israel, the believers in the nation of Israel at the end of the tribulation period, all these people populate the millennial kingdom physical here on earth, and we're administrators over them. And we also know that sin will still exist in this millennial kingdom. We've talked about the characteristics of the millennial kingdom, and one of them is that the effects of the curse that was put upon the world in the Garden of Eden, those effects are relieved. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, and I want to get back into where we were last time. And that basically is talking about the eternal state and this transition between the millennial kingdom and the eternal state. The eternal state has to come in at a specific time, because in order for the eternal state to occur, sin has to be eradicated from this world. We talk about the new heaven and the new earth, and we're going to get into that again. I want to repeat a little bit of what we did last time, but this eternal state is described as a place. I believe it's a physical place, just like we are now. It's a new heaven and a new earth, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. We talked about it last time a little bit. But in this new heaven and new earth, righteousness reigns. It's a place of righteousness, as the Bible describes it, and I'll give you the citation for that. And I think it's a brand new place. I gave you this quote last time, and I'm going to go over it again. Lewis Sperry Schaefer says that there are seven things that has to happen in this transition from the kingdom to the eternal state. The first is the release of Satan from the abyss at the end of the millennial kingdom. Satan's released from the abyss. And then number two, there's a revolt that occurs. And we talked about that too. The people that join the revolt at the end of the millennium are numbered like the sands of the seashore. You know, anybody that says that the millennial kingdom is all righteousness is mixing the two. Because we know that there are enough people at the end of that 1,000-year period that they raise a formidable army. So that occurs, that revolt occurs, led by Satan upon his release. But they're defeated ultimately. And finally, if we go back to that list that talked about Satan's progressive defeat, the last entry is at the end of the millennial kingdom, when Satan is utterly defeated and thrown into the cast into the lake of fire, where the beast and the prophet, the false prophet, already have been thrown. So at the end of that, the old heaven and old earth pass away. And I think people misconstrue this a little bit. The old heaven and old earth passing away. And then the creation of the new heaven and new earth. I'm going to go over a little bit, started this last time, and we're going to probably spend all of our time today in this topic, so I won't spend a lot of time here. The great white throne judgment occurs. Yes, there's a question. Correct.
And then in the next chapter, we're about to go into here, Satan is put in the abyss. Why didn't he get thrown into the lake of fire and at the same time?
Because the influences of the curse still exist on this earth, and he's got a role to play at the end to help identify, I mean, God knows. But I think the reason that Satan isn't cast into the lake of fire at the end of the tribulation, when the beast and the false prophet are thrown into the lake of fire, Satan still has a job to do. And you know, God could have done things in a couple of different ways, possibly. And maybe we don't fully understand how he's going to do it. But according to the way I'm reading the scriptures that address this, Satan still has a role to play in the end times, in this transition between millennium and not sure how to answer that. You know, there's obviously a transition from one state to the next state when we go from millennium to eternal state. And at the end of the millennium is when all evil is defeated, because, you know, again, we see effects of evil and effects of sin throughout the millennial period. But we don't see it in the eternal state. So I think his role is in raising that revolt to finally get to a point where that final transition occurs. Yes, there's another.
Does it also show that the problem is sinful man, because Satan is bound to a
Right. Yeah, you know, the comment there is this, Satan made me do it, is something that we use a lot of time. But in this millennial period, Satan isn't here, but the effects of sin in the heart of man is still here in the mortal bodies of those who have come into the millennial kingdom. So, you know, the New Testament writers talked a lot about the state of man and, you know, how our sins are our responsibility, and we're given that free gift of grace so that we can be relieved of that, so that, you know, it's nothing I did. Satan didn't make me sin, and I can't make me clean. So we need to keep that in mind as, you know, we think about the influences of sin, our sin nature, that each one of us as mortals still has. We aren't relieved of that sinful nature fully. I mean, we've got the helper to help us overcome it. But as we live our lives in the sanctification process that we're in now, that sin nature is still within us. It still is making us do things that we know we shouldn't do. And we need to overcome that. But at the end, well, at the rapture, when we are taken out of this earth, we're also taken out of that sin nature. That sin nature is gone from us at that moment. When we're in heaven after the rapture with Jesus, receiving our judgments and rewards in heaven in that period of time, our sin nature has been left behind. We have our resurrected bodies and our perfect bodies. And wow, am I not anywhere close to what I was going to talk about today? But this is good. I mean, you know, these things need clarified, and I certainly don't object to questions and comments. Anything else on this subject while we're here? Well, I'll continue then. You know, we talked of just going through Lewis Berry Schaeffer's 7 points. Number 5 is the creation of the new heaven and the new earth. The great white throne judgment happens in there. And we talked last week about where that is in the order of these 7. Schaeffer kind of puts it between the passing of the old heaven and old earth and the creation of the new heaven and the new earth. Other scholars put it after the creation of that new heaven and new earth, that the older earth passes away and then the new heaven and new earth are created, then the white throne judgment. I got that wrong. Some people put the great white throne judgment on one side or the other of the old heaven and earth passing away. So the new heaven and new earth definitely occur after, but whether the old earth is destroyed before or after the white throne judgment is kind of up for debate. And I apologize for confusing you all there. Let's move on. The descent of the bridal city from God out of heaven. And we talked about Paul speaks of this new city. I think it's Paul speaks of this new city in the present tense when he was writing about it, that it's something that already exists somewhere. We don't know where. And it's described in a lot of detail, and we'll be getting to that, not this week at all. And the last thing is the surrender of the mediatorial aspect of Christ's reign and a judgment to the eternal state immediately following. Christ now serves at the right hand of God the Father, mediating between Christians and God. That's his role. And even when he comes back on earth to rule over the earth, he's in that mediatorial responsibility, serving, ruling over the earth for God, kind of in that role as high priest for us, if you will. I mean, we're all priests, and we won't enjoy that one-on-one relationship with God until the eternal state, and that kind of changes at that time our relationship to God, and Christ's mediatorial role between us and God changes at the end of the millennial kingdom. And I'll get, I see some furrowed brows out there, so we'll get more into that later. So, we're talking about the eternal state. And there are five things that we're going to talk about as we go through the eternal state. And we talked about that it has to happen in a period of time after the theocratic administration role has been fully restored to God. Satan is the ruler of this earth now. In the millennial kingdom, Christ will rule, but there will still be influences of Satan's past several thousands of years. And we've got another question. Yes. The eternal state? Well, after, when we have, it's fine, when we have life on this earth is going to end at some point. And I've got a slide later that I'll show you that is kind of cute, but this world is eventually going to end, whether it's going to happen next month, next 5 minutes, next 1,000 years, we don't really know. That's all God's timing. But at the end of this world, the world is going to go through a real tough time, and God is going to be sorting out his followers from those who follow evil. And then we go into a 1,000-year period that we call the millennial kingdom. And then after that, and forever and ever, we'll be in the eternal state, and we will be there. God will be present with us. If you remember the picture of the Garden of Eden where God walked in the garden with Adam and Eve, God will be in this world with us, and will walk with us. We will be able to give him high fives as we're going down the streets of the Golden City. So we'll talk more about that later. But the eternal state is just that, what happens forever and ever after we die and God judges us. Yeah. I guess I have to pronounce my T's better then. Huh? Yes, it's eternal state, not eternal stake. That comes later today when we all get out there grilling. So we've talked about this theocratic administrator restoration. God reestablishes at the beginning, at the beginning of the millennial kingdom, Christ is set up as administrator. And one of the things that occurs during the 1,000-year kingdom is that this administration is solidly established. And at the very end, when the battle between Satan's rebellion and God occurs and is over in an instant, that seals it forever. So that theocratic administration has been restored completely and absolutely on this planet. And then God is free, because in that arena that he was seemingly defeated in the Garden of Eden, in that same arena, he has achieved ultimate and absolute victory. So now he's free to establish the new heaven and new earth. So let's go into I'm going to flip through some of this because it's taking longer than I wanted. But the next topic, or the topic that we're going to, yes.
On this eternal state, is there any indication from your studies? I know we get an incorruptible body when we go to the next life, right?
Yes. We'll get into more detail of what the eternal state is like. And I think that our incorruptible bodies do give us one thing that's pretty neat. Yes, I do think we'll be working. Work was not part of the curse, remember. In the garden, in that state that was the provisional setup of what God wanted the world to be like, Adam and Eve were given tasks to do, and they planted the gardens and tended the gardens and took care of things. And, we could get in. But, yes, I think we need it. or can we enjoy it? Might be a better way of asking the question. Yes, I think we will have work to do and we'll be able to reap the benefits of the labors that we put in, especially in the millennium. We'll get into the eternal state later. Yes, there was another question. I'm sorry. Well, I did read an article by one person who talked about in the millennial kingdom, the mortals will need to go to Israel every year and worship at the Feast of Tabernacles in Israel. And that kind of is what starts to lead the seeds of rebellion, because people resist that in the millennial kingdom. But this person described it this way. And we'll have pilots there. Maybe we'll be serving as pilots to fly the mortals in the airplanes to the, and those of us that have our immortal bodies will be able to serve as gate agents to load the people on the plane. We'll load them on the plane and Kurt will take off and fly them to Israel, and we'll go zooming past on our way to Israel to be with them there. Who knows? I mean, that's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of pictures of heaven and what things will be like that are really just entertaining, not really scriptural based, but don't know. Okay. All right. Poor Mike. Yet I was worried that I wouldn't have enough material for today, but. So we're talking about the new creation. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about 20 minutes talking about the new creation. And I've said that it's a new creation and not a restoration. And again, we're talking about the transition from millennial kingdom to eternal state. The old heaven and earth will pass away, and then God will create a new world. And there are five things that we're going to talk about as far as the whether it's a new creation and not a, I keep going more than one at a time. No, I didn't. Five things. We're going to talk about reasons why we can believe that it's a new creation and not a renovation. You know, I drive old cars. and one of them, we gave Michael to drive, and just recently the transmission went out on Michael's car. Now, we could have renovated that car, but everything else but the transmission would have still been old. And if you think about, you know, this transition, so much has been established on the earth that needs to be fixed. It's not just the transmission, but the engine still has 300,000 miles on it. All the suspension parts still has 300,000 miles on it. The brakes still have, well, they've been replaced a few times. But everything else on the car is still old. It's starting to rust and everything. So, you know, he made the decision to go ahead and just get a new car. So, you know, but this contamination that happened in the Garden of Eden, you remember we talked about, it wasn't just man that was cursed because of man's sin in the Garden of Eden. The whole earth was cursed, and the whole earth groans under the struggle of the curse upon it. The whole world, all of creation, was cursed because of man's sin, and that's something I think that we either gloss over or we forget about. The whole earth was cursed. And because this curse fell upon the earth, it's contaminated, if you will. And let's go ahead and get into this. Genesis 3, verses 17 through 19. And we've read this before. God said to Adam, "Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, 'You shall not eat from it,' cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles will grow, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you will eat bread. Then to Adam and Eve, by the sweat of your face you will eat bread. But cursed is the ground. That's the point that we're trying to make here. And in Romans 8, verses 19 through 22, it says, "For the anxious longing of the creation waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly." It wasn't creation's fault that it fell under this curse, but man's. "But because of him who subjected it." Creation was subjected to this futility because of him who subjected it. God put man in charge of the creation. And instead of ruling over creation like God intended, man listened to creation and started worshiping the creation instead of the Creator. "That the creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption and the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now." So in the millennium, one theory goes, we can't keep this corrupted mess because mankind did not do what it was supposed to do in relationship to creation. Mankind caused creation to be corrupted utterly by sin. So in order to get us to the eternal state, we passed through this millennial period. We've talked about that quite a bit, too. And in the millennial period, we know that the effects of the curse are alleviated, but not eliminated. And we see this in the discussion that we have about life. And if you go to the Old Testament, there's passages that talk about in this millennial period, if somebody dies at the age of 100, they'll be considered cursed because they died so young. Perhaps long life there is because we're in that period able to eat again from the tree of life. That's one possibility. But death is still present. You know, even though long life is a natural characteristic in this time, death is still present. So in Isaiah 65, and I've gotten off of my notes again. Imagine that. So in Isaiah 65, verse 20, it talks about this. "No longer will there be in it an infant who lives but a few days, or an old man who does not live out his years. For the youth will die at the age of 100, and the one who does not reach the age of 100 will be thought accursed." And then in Ezekiel chapter 45, verse 22, it says, "On that day," again, this is a millennial passage. Nope, that's a different topic. So long life is a characteristic, but death is still present. We see that effect of the curse on them. We also know that sin is present in the millennial kingdom. The passage in Ezekiel 46, verse 22, is talking about the Passover celebration, when the high priest will go into the millennial temple and offer sacrifices for the people. Verse 22 says, "On that day the prince," and here it's referring to the priest going into the temple, "the prince shall provide for himself and all the people of the Lamb a bull for a sin offering." Again, this is a millennial passage talking about offerings in the millennial temple to atone for the sins of the people in the millennium. So sin is still present. Sin is still present. And the next passage is in Zechariah. Yes.
Okay. But Jesus has already taken care of all sin, right? So it's not, is it really to atone?
Again, the offerings are reestablished in the Millennial Temple. So this is still going through the Old Testament offering procedures. Yes, you know, the penalty for that is paid for all mankind for all times. That's why Jesus said at his death, it is finished. What was finished was paying the penalty for those sins, but the offerings and the temple sacrifices are still followed in the Millennial Temple as described here. I'm sorry? Yeah, I think so. I'm drawing a blank here. You want to... And strictly enforced, as we have discussed. You know, this is the period of time when Jesus' rule will be characterized as ruling with a rod of iron. You know, the consequences for disobedience are great, so you have to go through all of these elements of the law to follow the law to the letter, you know, including going to Jerusalem to celebrate at the Feast of Tabernacles, where we know what happens there. The land is rain is withheld. Yes. You're right. I mean, the ticket into the Millennial Kingdom is belief in Jesus as the Messiah. I mean, that's clear. So everybody who starts in the Millennial Kingdom is a, if you will, born-again believer. Those that are born after are still born with a sin nature and need to come to that salvation. So maybe these things are done and reinstated in order to, again, what was the purpose of the law when the law was given? Was it to save people? No, it was to point to Jesus. So in that same way that the Old Testament Jews practiced that in order to point forward to Jesus, maybe the world, because I think the world is going to be under the same set of rules, the world is doing this in the Millennial Kingdom to point back to what Jesus has done in remembrance, perhaps, as a more clear picture of the salvation that's available through belief in Jesus. All right, continuing on then, if we look at Zechariah, Zechariah chapter 14, verses 16 through 18, talks about this time when all people, all territories are to send representatives to Jerusalem to worship in the Table of Tabernacles, the Table of Booths, and whichever district or territory doesn't send representatives to participate in this, then that territory will have no rain, and it will happen immediately. So I'm going to continue on to a passage that we've read enough that we should be fairly familiar with it. This passage in Revelation 20, starting at verse 7. When the 1,000 years are completed, it says, Satan will be released from his prison and come out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together for the war. The number of them is like the sand of the seashore. And they came up upon the broad plain of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city. Again, that's Jerusalem. And fire came down from heaven and devoured them. And the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, and where the beast and false prophet are also, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. And again, going back to verse 8, it says Satan comes out to deceive the nations of the earth. That's what Satan has been doing since Genesis chapter 3, deceiving the nations of the earth. And he deceives us today. There's a lot of deception going on today. Our world is characterized by deception. Yes?
So this Gog, Magog, is that the same or different from Ezekiel 38?
Okay, keep in mind that Gog and Magog, in addition to talking about territory sometimes, just refers to leaders and their co-leaders and things like that. So that's a word that can be used a couple different ways. You know, here, I'm not sure which the gist of what he's trying to say here is all over the earth, everywhere in the earth, to the north and south and the leaders of the world, as opposed to identifying a particular place out of the world. He's gathering them from everywhere. Could be. You know, the known world at that time was just the land of the north. But, you know, again, the word Gog and Magog could just refer to general leaders. Is that?
Yeah, I'd say different. Well, one word answer is different.
Yeah, it's different. And he's going to let me get away with a simplistic answer here. That's good. In Revelation 21, verse 8, or let's go to Revelation 21, 4, because that's the next one coming up, gives the characteristics of what will happen after this. And if we look at Revelation 20 and 21, is describing this transition between the millennial kingdom and the eternal state. And in the eternal state, he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will no longer be any death. There will no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away. So all of the things that we see in this world that are part of this world, the death, the suffering, the pain, the toil that we struggle with to make ends meet every week, all of that is part of what Satan brought into this world when he was successful in tempting Adam and Eve. And all of that will be gone. There will no longer be any mourning because there will no longer be any death. There's no longer any pain. These things have all passed away in the millennial kingdom that's described here in verse 4 of Revelation 21. And in contrast, in Revelation 21, verse 8 says, "But for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in that lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death, the separation from God, the gnashing of teeth that's described again and again." So there's a definite difference of what's happening in the millennial kingdom and the eternal kingdom, kind of evidenced by these passages here. So let's go on to the second topic of the five. Maybe we'll get through this. No, we won't get through it today. But let me introduce this idea that Peter's description of the eternal state in 2 Peter 3, verses 10 through 12. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heavens will disappear with a roar. The elements will be destroyed by fire, and the earth and everything in it will be laid bare. Since everything will be destroyed in this way, what kind of people ought you to be? This earth is going to go up in smoke, and Peter describes it here in kind of vivid detail, if you will. They'll disappear with a roar, and everything will be destroyed by fire. Everything that we built or have on this earth will be gone. One of the things that, and this is right out of Dr. Woods' presentation, but he says there's global warming coming to the planet, but it's not quite like what the environmentalists would have you to believe. 2 Peter 3:10 says, the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with an intense fire, and the earth and its works will be burned up. We'll be watching this from afar. We'll be watching afar from afar, as they say down south. But this world is going to be destroyed. And Dr. Woods and Schaefer believe that it's a total destruction, that it's not just a cleansing to be renewed, but a total destruction. And in this way, the world is going to be destroyed, and everything in it that's evil, anything that sin has touched, will be destroyed and will be gone. There's been some articles I've read recently about creation of the world, or, what happened at the beginning of the world, and there's general acceptance that what exists here was created out of nothing, out of energy, that there wasn't anything here before but energy, and we believe that what was here before was God's presence in the they're not present in the universe because there wasn't a universe. Just God's presence was all that there was. And when God spoke the heavens into existence, that took his energy, his being, what he was, and made something out of it, something out of nothing. And when the earth is destroyed, as described here in 2 Peter, I can see that the sense that this goes back to God's being, goes back to nothingness, so that there's nothing here, so that when the new heaven and new earth are created, and I used the phrase ex nihilo before, which is a Latin phrase that means something out of nothing. So when God speaks it out of nothing, the new heaven and new earth, pure and uncontaminated by past sin, by past curse, will be created. And that's kind of the second, this total destruction of the world is kind of the second point that we're going to make here. We've got three more to do, and I'm going to quit here, and we'll continue on this with this next week. Thank you for your time.